Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really delighted to be meeting today Joel Covell. And he is a professor at Bard College in New York, and a writer, and also ran for the New York Senate in 99 and against 98 against Ralph Nader in the Green Party primary in the year 2000. And we are going to be talking about his very recent book called The Enemy of Nature, The End of Capitalism or The End of the World? And I think that title gets right down to it. And I was saying, Joel Covell, that I just, as I was just perusing your book here, and I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, I just was so touched that I was getting a lot of tears coming to my eyes, because I feel like it's the little I've read is so right on. There's so few people that understand the connections of everything. And both of us are not young. Maybe it takes a while. I don't know. But I sure hope more and more people start getting it. And you do talk about the connections of everything and the basic problems with capitalism. But you can talk about this much better than I. So please do.
Well, thank you very much. I wrote this book in order to get people moving, that they could begin to feel that there is an alternative and that there has to be an alternative. I chose the very first sentence carefully, and it goes something like, increasing numbers of people are coming to the conclusion that capitalism is the uncontrollable force driving our ecological crisis. And then I go on to say, only to become frozen in their tracks by the awesome implications of the inside. Because while it's necessary and a good thing to undertake various kinds of reforms and to help with recycling or to help with clean elections and do all these things, I think a lot of people do realize that there is something larger. There's a world system at work, and that world system, through its ever-present expansion, which has a truly cancerous quality, is basically destabilizing ecosystems on a planetary scale. And because it keeps expanding, and because it shows no signs of being controllable, because it has a chaotic world system that it runs, it distinctly places the whole future at risk. And to put it, use a fashionable term, it's unsustainable. And I mean, people have talked about that and so forth, but what I try to do is specify what's unsustainable is the capitalist system as such. Now, I don't mean that the capitalist system is just an economic arrangement. It has many, many deeper implications. It's built on a foundation of centuries, or really millennia, of domination, and particularly by gender, and it has many aspects, but it is now controlling the world and bringing the entire planet under its regime, trying to convert everything to commodities, relentlessly expanding, because for any capitalist firm or capitalist class or capitalist nation, to not grow is to die. It's basically a system that has no hope of equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And so as it continues to grow, and I give all kinds of evidence and detail within the book, but as it continues to grow, it obviously breaks down the human relationship to nature at many, many different points. And since we are part of nature and live from nature, mm-hmm. it places the future of civilization at grave risk. And I want people to face up to that. I want people to try to think about what causes this and how it can be confronted. And I believe that that the hopelessness, the sort of learned helplessness that we have, the inability to, you know, think that there can be an alternative, is part of the system. So the first step in breaking loose from the system is to recognize that it's trying to make us feel this way, that it, after all, is only a human arrangement, however powerful, that it is in a moment of grave crisis, that it is losing legitimacy all around the world. People are, in fact, rising up all around the world. And I want the readers of this book to recognize that we are all in a moment of great historical crisis, but a crisis is an opportunity as well as a danger, as the great Chinese ideogram put it. So I want people to see this as an opportunity and not to retreat from it, but to move ahead and to try to figure out ways of building a world beyond capital and to start on that task now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you shared with me that you used to be a psychiatrist, and the whole issue of denial is so incredible. I go around saying, you know, all the time, how can people be so stupid as to spoil their own nest? I mean, that is just beyond stupidity. And a lot of things are so stupid. They're just totally, that's the only word I can think of. And there's just so much people don't want to look at. What do you think about that? Or, well, you just are saying somewhat that's on purpose. Well, say a little more. Yeah. About that denial and hopelessness and helplessness are really very key here. And people also say, but we don't know what to do. And I think, well, why don't you know what to do?
I don't want to blame people. I don't think it's stupid for individual people to be that way, mm-hmm. because we all are fed a diet that encourages us to believe that. I mean, the notion that there is no alternative is, articulated by Margaret Thatcher back in the 70s, and it's been widely trumpeted by ideologues and intellectuals and scholars and think tanks and, of course, politicians and public relations industries. We have a colossal enterprise in this society of sort of getting people to think things the way the ruling elites want us to think. And therefore, the average person, A, is denied key information, is told false things, that namely that the system is in fact taking care of business, and it is in fact a reasonable world, whereas it's not a reasonable world. And people know that, but they don't have a way of getting in touch with their knowledge because, you know, the surface is controlled by all these institutions of the press, the media, the intellectuals, the thing, whatever. It's a big system. So I don't think it's that people are stupid, but their better ideas are kept sequestered both within themselves and between themselves. I believe that as people become detached from this system, as they begin to recognize that they're are, in fact, you know, grave problems, that the world is not being well managed at all, that the future is, in fact, at risk, that their children and grandchildren's lives are very much at stake here. I do have faith in human beings. I do think that we are capable as a species of very creative responses. I think those responses are just buried beneath this pile of hopelessness. And that's what the denial is, because it seems overwhelming. It may be overwhelming in the long run, but it's not overwhelming for any individual person to begin taking stock of this and to begin linking up with others. Because, you know, wherever we're going to go in the long run, there has to be a first step and another step. And all those steps can be taken. And we'll take those steps as far as we can take them.
Right. It certainly is step by step. And when I say how can, you know, people be so stupid, I understand very well it's a systemic, and I didn't mean to sound so blamey, because it certainly is absolutely systemic. Capitalism, boy, that's not a word that people use in
a critical
they don't use it in a critical way. They don't use it in a popular
Yeah, well, look, just turn on the TV set. Look at the ads. Look at the way it's celebrated. Look at the way the lifestyle is celebrated in the glossy magazines. You look at the way, you know, the president talks and the way he is put together this so-called war on terrorism to try to scare people out of thinking for themselves and to you know, just fall in line behind a policy that is objectively insane. As you know, just recently, the president admitted, not that he himself would do that, but he was told to admit that, yes, global warming is taking place, yet, yes, human society is responsible by producing greenhouse gases, yes, this is a serious problem, but on the other hand, don't expect him or the administration to do anything about it, it's tough, you just have to learn to adapt. Now, that's the kind of outrageous statement that shows you that this system is, in fact, utterly bankrupt, that it cannot take care of life. And people have to suddenly come to and say, hey, this cannot be tolerated. The long-term effects of global warming, which I would emphasize is only one part of the ecological crisis, although, of course, immense, are horrendous to contemplate when they're talking about the global temperature rising by as much as 9 degrees by the end of the century. We're talking about countries like Bangladesh being underwater by the year 2050. And where are those 200 million people going to go? And what about all the other cities that are going to be underwater, like New Orleans and Venice, Italy, and many, many other places? And we realize the terrible crises induced by migrations and the destabilizations that are taking place even now, and recognize that this is only going to grow exponentially. And then you see that this system, this government, this capitalist order is absolutely incapable of rationally dealing with the future and the fate of people. So this should be a sign for people to say, enough, enough, we must think of alternatives. And how to get there.
Well, yeah, I just want to put in my 2 cents here. I don't know what you think about this, and I don't want to spend the program on this. But I would like to know what you think about it, because it seems to me that basically the people in power understand very well that the resources are running out, which is the case. There's no question about that. There may be a question about which year the oil's going to be gone, but it's going to be gone, and that they're basically trying to kill as many people or don't care. I mean, I know this is extreme, but so that they can have those resources. And of course, water, people cannot get. I mean, living beings cannot get plants and animals cannot get along without water. And so they're, you know, trying to make sure that they have control of those resources that are indeed getting less.
Absolutely. But there's another side to it, which is equally important. The most important consideration for capitalism is profits. Profits must keep increasing, and ideally the rate of profit must keep increasing. It's not just that they should make a reasonable profit, but that profit has to keep increasing. When the system goes into crisis, starts getting into a downturn, that is an alarm bell, and the whole Bush administration is centered and focused, and its raison d'etre is to try to restore this lagging capitalist system by all means necessary, including war, and including rolling back even the slender environmental safeguards that were put into place over the last 30 years. Because these environmental safeguards are all brakes and checks on accumulation or profitability. And people have to face up to that. The Bush administration, of course, is a right-wing Republican administration, was put into power without legitimacy. It didn't really win the election. But that just shows how important this crisis is taken by the ruling elites. So, yes, the longer or middle-range picture is running out of resources. Yes, it is necessary to secure the remaining oil and get natural gas that's in the Caspian Sea, although it should be pointed out that the reason that the Bush administration wants to control those resources is not directly for the use of the United States, but to actually control them, to control other societies that do need them, like China, India, and Japan, who are major, you know, prizes in the world economic picture. So This is all played out in terms of complex interrelationship between economics, geostrategics, and the, you know, their perception of what the Earth's ecologies will tolerate. But the common root of that is that this is a capitalist system that must grow without end. And these guys have internalized it. They don't have any choice. They can't think anything else. I think it's important for listeners and readers to realize that the capitalist is not free. He himself is a slave to this system. He just exists to expand the capital under his supervision. And if he stops doing it, he's kicked out. I mean, he has a golden parachute and all that. He does very well. But he loses his prestige. He loses his power. And so these guys fight. Or to put it another way, the guys who are selected for this long process of socialization to get to the top of the system are ruthless, cold, calculating fighters who have no soft edges to them and are incapable of seeing just what an ecological disaster they're actually planning for the world. Or they just see it in a very, very dim way. That's the real denial.
My guest is Joel Covell, the author of The Enemy of Nature. The subtitle is The End of Capitalism or The End of the World. And I was saying earlier that I think it's definitely that serious.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely that serious. So I'd like to spend the rest of our time here, Joel, talking about what to do, because it for sure can't go on. Because for one thing, people aren't going to have money for to buy these goods if they even get produced and all that sort of thing. So, and we see poverty growing and the difference between rich and poor, the gap between rich and poor, and people suffering more and more at a really personal level. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason to think that that's going to reverse. So what to do starting now?
Yeah, well, I'll get into that presently, but that's what you just said should be underscored. That gap between rich and poor, that immiseration of masses of people, shows that capital produces not just wealth but poverty. And with the widening gap between rich and poor, it creates a chaotic world that makes for terrorism, all these wars, and also makes it impossible to rationally deal with the crisis. So the very first thing to do is to is to recognize and wake up and sort of lift up your eyes, and stop sort of just looking at the most immediate creature comforts, but to start looking at the larger circumstance and to start building towards the future, and to educate yourself, to start studying and learning and working with others. But the general principle of what has to be done is this. I'd like to put it on a somewhat abstract level, because it's rather more hopeful if you can do that. Basically, what capitalism does is that it inserts commodities everywhere in the world, and commodities are like clothes moths that sort of eat up the fabric of ecosystems. I mean, the capitalist kind of commodity, it snips those things that bind together or connect things and produces separated, isolated people as well.
Well, that is pretty abstract. Maybe
yeah,
you should say
abstract.
That.
I'm going to get right into
it. I mean,
that.
I understand. Okay.
But what I want people to realize is that capitalism destabilizes ecosystems, whether it's a community, whether it's a forest. It breaks up the rich interconnection of things. So the basic movement against this has to be to recreate healthy, flourishing ecosystems. That's the essentials of this ecological politics. The ultimate goal of this is to reach a society wherein people are free to creatively produce and where they're not separated from the means of their production, so that they can in fact build the kind of world that they need, and not having experts do it, but it's a full democratization of the world. And in doing so, they also change their needs. They're not subject to the kind of materialist impulses that is really an alienation of our power as human beings. So the ultimate goal is a society which I call eco-socialism, because it's grounded in the earlier socialisms, but it's very, very different from them in many respects. But I want to put that word out there so that people can think about it. But it's a society where people are freely associated from below, maximally democratic, and in which they now learn to recognize themselves in nature and nature in themselves. Now, the path to that is multiform. There is no single royal road. It's not like, you know, you get the industrial workers, although the industrial workers are important. It includes mothers. It includes teachers. It includes really every point of human existence, gardeners. It includes those who would build, you know, community centers. It, in fact, it includes what people are doing already, people, you know, who are beginning to awaken, but it adds to that, that they have to begin to look beyond what they're doing already and to look beyond both towards this ultimate goal, which I just mentioned, which is kind of a free society in harmony with nature, and to start looking to form linkages with other people and to start organizing themselves and to start interconnecting themselves. And there's a lot at hand about that. I mean, you know, the Green Parties are play a role, but it's also very much of an international movement. We had a World Social Forum at Porto Alegre in Brazil. It's going to be repeated next year and then the year after in India. People have to get involved in that because this is also entails a new kind of planetary consciousness. We have to recognize that we're one species on one planet that's floating through space, and our destiny is to care for that planet as a whole. But as we do that, we have to reach out to other people. So it's a combination of building locally, and a healthy ecosystem is as elementary as a mother and a child. A mother is a healthy ecosystem. Why? Because an ecosystem is like elements, it has elements that are separate but connected, and they undergo development. And that's what raising a child is, or that's what growing a garden is, or that's what, you know, playing a string quartet is, or so, you know, and that's what building a political party is, and that's what, you know, building, you know, a community center, building new forms of production. But these forms of production have to be seen as beyond capital. And that's the hard part, because capital exists by exploiting labor. That's what capital is about. It's not a rational system of markets. It's a way in which some people exploit and extract the labor of others and control that. So that has to be undone, because that's a non-healthy ecosystem. So I know I'm, you know, kind of hastening over a huge terrain here, but I want the listeners to realize that there is, in fact, a whole world out there that is open for this, but we have to look at the long range and the whole picture and begin reaching out to others and begin building, you know, new forms of political association and new forms of production. And there are many things that are happening like this, like independent media collectives. There's a movement called the Indie Media Movement that represents autonomous production from below, spontaneous, non-hierarchical, non-exploitative of labor. You see, it begins to meet the criterion of what is a good, healthy, growing ecosystem. So I want people to feel that they have ample means of participation from where they live, but they have to begin looking beyond where they live to a planetary level and to the long picture. And that will, I think, deepen their resistance and gradually prepare them for the struggle that's bound to emerge. And I try to outline that in the last third of my book. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wish we had more time. It's going so quick. Well, Joe Covell, I'm thinking, because I agree with you, and I don't know if everybody's understanding what you're talking about, ecosystems and, yes, and of course, in capitalism and socialism, those words that kind of light people up sometimes. But in any case, and I am involved in personally in some of those things. And we come back because we still live in a capitalist society. And I've always said, well, capitalism is based on exploitation. That's the bottom line. There's no way of getting around that. Just isn't. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, just realistically, to have a community center, for instance, mm-hmm. Everybody needs money. That's capital. I mean, in a way. I mean, we're talking about capitalism. But right now, you need money to get the wood, to get the cement, to hire the carpenters. I mean, everybody can't be working for free, or maybe they can. But I'm involved with the indie media. It's wonderful because there's no money, and people don't get. But you got to have the computers. You can maybe get some computers donated, but those people got to have food, and where they got to have a job that brings money for, you know, somewhere this money comes into the picture.
Well, nobody said it was going to be easy. It's a struggle, and money is real. Money is the sign that we are stuck in this society, and there's no way you can abolish this society. I wouldn't even want to. I mean, if we could say, you know, just erase everything that is and start all over, that's crazy. You have to build from within. You have to build from within and connect from within. And it is absolutely a struggle. But I do believe, because, I mean, there are many instances in my own life, I think in your own and the reader's lives, if you think about it, there are many instances where you can see that cooperative endeavor, that new forms of work and labor can be joyous, they can be life-affirming, they can be non-materialistic, and they can not eliminate the need for money, because that would be, you know, a fantasy, but it can change the terms. It can make people relatively freer, and as they become relatively freer, they become relatively more hopeful, they become relatively able to join up with others, they deepen their studies. And remember, this is all predicated on an unfolding crisis. I would say that were the situation to simply extrapolate in present terms, very little could happen. But I do believe that the structures are such that this is going to get a lot more hotted up as time goes on, and more interesting, perhaps, more hopeful, more dangerous. There are really two kinds of curves that are going on in the world today. There's a curve of this form of progressive destruction with authoritarian governments. I mean, new kinds of fascist governments that are rising, terrible deprivations of freedom, clamping down everything for growth. And then there's another curve of life-affirming protest and rebuilding on a world scale, this kind of planetary consciousness. Remember, at Puerto Alegre, last January, the people said, another world is possible. Now, that hadn't been said before this year. I mean, you know, occasionally, but as a part of a movement. And that means that the ideas such as that I'm talking about are surfacing in people's minds all around the world. When they can start thinking another world is possible, then they are beyond the deadly notion of there is no alternative. And that gives hope, and hope gives strength, and well, who knows? But it's those two curves. The question is which one will get to the future and which one will determine our fate.
And all this is process and new considerations in how we do things, you know, like having less stuff, spending less money, growing food, using alternative energy methods with things. I mean, it's a whole bunch of things. It's not, as you said in the beginning, it's not just one thing.
Yeah. It's a whole way of being. It's not just economic arrangements. It's not passing this law, that law. It's an entire radical transformation of our human being in relation to nature. And that's what makes it very exciting. I think as people recognize that, they can say, well, these are terrible times, but we're living in a tremendous time of tremendous challenge and openness and opportunity. And let's move ahead.
Right. Well, and you can get Joel Covell's book. It's widely available, The Enemy of Nature. And Joel Covell is Kovel. The name of the book, The Enemy of Nature, The End of Capitalism or The End of the World. And I think there's something very special about this book, so check it out. Thank you very much, Joel Covell.
And thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. My pleasure. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.